How about no?
Yeah, I don't think so. No.
That's a big no.
It's a huge no.
At Kiefer Kia, we know what you're going through, so we're helping out. With no down payments and no payments for 120 days. We believe that maintaining safe and reliable transportation is a vital need to our residents. During this trying time, we are taking all recommended precautions to provide a safe and clean environment that protects our employees and customers. If you need to service your vehicle, call Kiefer Kia or visit us online at KieferKia.com to schedule your appointment today. Shop inventory 24 hours a day. Kiefer Kia says yes online and over the phone, all with no down and no payments for 120 days. We understand your safety is most important and that your transportation is an important aspect too. Visit us online to schedule your appointment. KieferKia.com, where we do sell cars every day. Call 844-465-4333 for all the details. On approved credit, plus title license and 150 title and registration processing fee. No payments through Kia Motors Finance. Interest accrues from start date of contract. Offers not in combination expires 5/5/2020.
KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
And we welcome you back. It is, folks, the Friday edition of Sports Talk coming at you, going strong. The weekend is here, for what that's worth under these trying circumstances. ESPN the last couple days has been all about the Masters, because today and yesterday they would have been airing the actual Masters tournament. And right now, I've been playing this game with myself. Once it starts, I just take a look at who they're showing, and it's like, oh, right. This is the 2005 Masters, where Tiger went toe-to-toe with Chris DeMarco. I remember it rained, and then there was delay, and then it actually ended exactly 15 years ago today. Tiger won at the time his fourth green jacket that put him in a tie for second with guys like Arnie behind Jack. Of course, price of poker went up last year when he won his fifth, and that was one of the great moments in Masters or major golf history, his chip-in where, a couple of years earlier, he had switched over from playing Titleist, using Titleist driver, to all the Nike equipment, and he rolled in that chip, and on the last par three, ended up in a playoff with DeMarco and beat him on the first hole. So it's one of those things where you know what's coming, but if you're a big fan, you're like, oh, man, this is going to be awesome. At the time, DeMarco was 36 years old. He was a guy, you know, this is kind of a weird thing to say. He was a thing for a while, but he had a very short, compact, competitive career as far as being on the international stage. And he's from a place that I'm actually really familiar with called Huntington, New York. It's out on Long Island. I could even tell you which exit it is off of the Long Island Expressway, because my cousins used to live out there in Huntington, exit 51 off the LIE. For those of you who've been mostly West Coast travelers, I would compare the Long Island Expressway to the 10, whatever the worst highway is in LA, where It's just the stretch of road, and it does the one thing that makes you want to slit your throat. It kind of crests, and you get a complete view of where you're never going to get. It just, I've been on the LIE very few times, and whenever I've had to make the trip to the island, I always took the LIRR, Long Island Railroad, because to get stuck in traffic there, and as opposed to getting stuck in traffic where, you know, you're 17 miles from home and there's a light at the end of the tunnel, you can get stuck on Long Island and the bridges start to back up, and you realize I'm not going to be home for 3 hours, and I'm only like 52 miles from my frigging door. So anyway, that's where he's from. I don't know how I got sidetracked there, because I'm me. He, in 2004, 5, and 6, he was a playa. He finished second to Tiger at that Masters. He finished second at the 2004 PGA. He finished second at the 2006 U.S. Open Champion, British Open Championship. And in every one of the majors, he lost in a playoff. So in 2004, the PGA, he is in it with Justin Leonard and Vijay the DJ Singh, lost in a playoff. Tiger, he lost in a playoff. And even in one of the European events, in a pretty big one, he lost in a playoff. And then he was out of golf by 2008. And I think he suffered an injury. He played. He was a Gaeta. Made his bones on the Canadian and the Web.com tour. He won on the Euro tour. He won on something called the, you ready? Korn Ferry Tour, K-A-O-R-N. I have no idea what that is. So he hasn't, oh, here it is. So he played at a high level from 2002 to 2006. He was in the top 10 of the world golf rankings for 61 weeks, all the way up to number 6. And then he had to undergo an arthroscopic surgical procedure on his left shoulder. And it turned out to be chronic. And he actually, his regular gig now is, if you listen to the Golf Channel, he appears on a show called Morning Drive. He's got a really good reputation. I remember from back then, I'm verifying it now on his bio, that he's been married to the same woman he's known since seventh grade. I mean, they did the whole thing. They went to the junior prom. They went to the senior prom together. And his kid, Christian, actually played at South Florida. And he just went pro. I haven't heard much about him. He's been a real charitable guy. He's got a really good reputation. I've got some relatives that live in Florida. And the fundraisers he does is for something called ROCK, R-O-C-K, Reaching Out to Cancer Kids. And the Norma DeMarco Tee Up for Golf Life tournament in honor of his mom, who died from cancer right around the time he was, you know, an elite world player, dueling with guys like Mickelson and Justin Leonard and Tiger. These guys, they kind of, if you follow sports like a lot of us do, they kind of pass through your lives. Then all of a sudden, like, a decade's gone, and it's like, what the hell ever happened to Chris DeMarco? And that's the answer. Chronic shoulder injury. Couldn't play golf anymore. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Hit us up for the text line 321-0824. You can try us on Twitter at 953thescore. For the station, for the show, it's at SportsTalk953. And for Nick back in the studio, anxiously awaiting some company or a phone call, it is at Rick Nodgers. All right. I think I got through about everybody I wanted to talk about as far as quarterback draft busts who went 1, 2, or 3 in their draft. How would you evaluate RG3? And does injury play into the evaluation. For example, despite the fact that there was no way to know, I mean, if you make a pick like Greg Oden at one and he can't physically play, is it a bust? Does the reason matter? If you spend a first pick and get nothing in return, do you just have to eat it? Does bust mean you don't get anything or the bare minimum? Or by the time the guy's career was even in a position to plant roots, much less take roots, does that still qualify? For example, the Raiders took Jamarcus Russell first overall in 2007. His first year, he only started one game. He started, played a full season in 2008. They went 5-10. By the end of 2009, they were 2-7. He hasn't played in the NFL yet. They spent the top overall pick for 25 starts. Bust? Like I said, Greg Oden, do you say bust? Because, you know, I think in the entirety of his pro career, I think, I'm not sure if maybe it was at a certain point, but when you consider he came up in 07, yeah, that was it. Before his last season in 2014 with Miami, it was a remarkable kind of numerical oddity that 2007, 2008, 9, 2009, 10, he played a total of 82 games with the Blazers. So like one full season, I mean, is there any way around? Like, it's, the pick was a bust. Do you want to lean on him and say it was a bust? I mean, do you incorporate the physical nature into that particular evaluation? And I would say that we're going to get someone who's going to offer an answer as we work our way to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in a Brad. How's it going, Brad?
Hey, Steve. It's been so long since I called that I had to actually remind myself what the number was.
Nice.
That just speaks to the 5 years of the last month that have been everyone's lives.
No,
but I've been listening and waiting for my moment, and when you go back-to-back RG3 and Greg Oden, I'm like, oh, man, here we go. I got a call.
Yeah, you know, I don't always think of you when I mention Washington, unless it's the Capitals. I do always think of you and Josh and a couple others when we mention the Blazers.
Yep. Well, to RG3, I got to say the bust is Dan Snyder in the field conditions of FedEx Field. They put him in an unsafe playing condition. That field was garbage, and it's just super unfortunate. He never got the chance. You know, he never got the chance, and I wouldn't say it was a bust on him. I would say, you know, all of those quarterbacks that go to the next level and no longer can outrun the defenders the way they've done their whole career, it was a bust whoever didn't teach him how to slide. Like I said, the field maintenance crew on that field, that's really what it came down to for me. And it's just, it's a sad one. For Oden, it'll always be a bust on the franchise because they chose him. Much like Brandon Roy, I think they had to have known, I don't know. I guess no one knew, but at the same time, you know, you watched him play, and he looked like he was middle-aged from the jump, you know. The fact that he turned out to have glass knees I don't know. Yeah, hard to say. Both of them are hard for me because, you know, they're players that had so much potential, and it's just sad to see it end that way for both of them.
Yeah, Brad, one thing that you brought up, and I don't know if a lot of people remember because it's crazy to think it was like 7 years ago. I mean, that controversy at the end of his rookie year when he got injured and then they brought him back too soon. And Shanahan said that he had gotten an all clear from a famous doctor, Dr. Andrews. And then later, not too soon after, Andrews came out and said, I did not give him the all clear. And then he had to have that surgery to repair two ligaments, his ACL and another one, I think an LCL. So, yeah. That was part of Washington mishandling him and just not seeing the bigger picture, going for the immediate fix.
Yep. Well, they did. Just I hate to say it, I just despise Dan Snyder, and he's run a once proud franchise into the ground because of his leadership or lack thereof, and it goes throughout the organization. It will be interesting to see if Rivera, as a coach, can make any change, and if Snyder will learn to get out of his way a little, out of his own way a little bit. But from what I've seen, I just don't think so. You know, I think I've told you this, but in D.C. there are burgundy and gold bumper stickers that just say simply "Sell the team, Dan," and I kind of like to get one, even though it'd be lost on people out here.
Yeah, well, I want my orange and blue one to travel around New York for the basketball team.
Yep. You know, that's a very very similar situation there.
Nice. Hey, it's good to hear from you. I hope you and yours are hanging in there and doing well, Brad.
Yeah, you know, doing the best we can on a day-to-day basis. It's an emotional roller coaster, but you know, there's some good things about it too, so. Anyway, to you as well, and have been enjoying how you've been handling the lack of content. You've been doing, you've been digging deep, and it's fun to listen to, even though I haven't called in very much.
All right, appreciate it. Talk to you soon,
take
Brad.
Care.
Take it easy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Again, feel free to hit us up on the text line, 321-0824. I tell you, there's some videos going around Twitter with announcers broadcasting kind of mundane, everyday life things. And the one broadcaster who's got a black and white lab, two of them, and he's British. And I guess his name is Andrew Cotter, who is a broadcaster from the UK, has a competition between the black lab, who's a little older, the white lab, who's a little younger. The black lab has a toy. He counts it down. He says basically it was a minute competition. Would the black lab get to keep the toy? And I'm telling you, his deadpan delivery, I tweeted it out on at Sports Talk 953, and during the break, I laughed out loud. I'm sorry. This is literally the brilliance that we need. There's another one where at UO Yellow just tweeted at me saying there's another one. He called their race to eat dinner, and I'll tell you what, if you're a dog person, it's hysterical because they just go at it, and it is down to the wire. I can't wait to look at this video with the sound up when we go to break. This is what our lives has come to, folks, but we need to accept it and be safe and stay the hell away from each other and only go anywhere when it's necessary. And someday I may be sitting here saying, oh, by the way, you're going to watch tonight's game and break out a depth chart or talk about statistics or something like that. Yeah, somebody texted me and was asking about RG3, Robert Griffin III. We were talking about, you know, does he qualify as a bust? Or, I mean, with the second pick, they didn't get a lot. But it was because they, you know, they had him for 3 years. He started 35 games. He went 14-21. You know, he started out really well. I mean, they had a winning record, and he had the top touchdown interception ratio as a rookie. He passed for 3,200 yards, ran for almost 800. He was the offensive rookie of the year, set a record. I don't know if it's beaten. Best passer rating ever for a rookie. Late in the year, suffered a knee injury, then a concussion. But like I said, the controversy is rookie year when Washington decided to play him after he had taken a hit by Haloti Ngata, caused the knee injury on the last drive of that game. And if you remember, they came back too soon. Shanahan, then the coach of Washington, said he got an all clear from Dr. James Andrews for an LCL sprain. Turned out he did not. Then after re-injuring the knee in a playoff loss to Seattle, had to have surgery to repair both his fibular collateral ligament and his interior cruciate ligament, as we know, is an ACL. So is he a bust? You look at the list, who wound up, who would you call a bust, who underachieved? And, as we speak in the world of guys like Jameis Winston and Baker Mayfield, I mean, the jury is still out. Jamarcus Russell, Leaf, Couch. Definitely Jamarcus and Leaf, because in particular, the team that drafted them so high got nothing. And then, Matt Stafford, is he a Hall of Famer? Did they alter from becoming the Lions? Not really. Sam Bradford, a lot of injuries. And, of course, if you look at how often he played for the team that drafted him number one out of Oklahoma after winning the 2009 Heisman, the Rams had him for 4 years. He won a total of 18 games over 4 years, missed all of 2014, missed more than half of 2013, missed six games in 2011, moved on to Philly. So, he's in the neighborhood of the B word. St. Louis sure didn't get from him what they would have hoped with the number one overall pick. Cam Newton, got him to a Super Bowl. Andrew Luck retired prematurely, but he was fantastic. Troy Aikman, he did okay. Bledsoe, got him to a Super Bowl. Jeff George, he didn't live up, and he annoyed the hell out of a lot of people because in his mind, that dude was obnoxious. Out of Illinois, the number one pick, he had that Cutler thing about him where it's like, you're pretty good. Do you have to be a jerk about it? So the Colts take him. He goes 5-7, 1-15, 6-4, 2-9. Then goes to Atlanta, where he's their starter for 2 years. He started a year in Oakland. He started a year in Minnesota, 27,000 yards, 154 TDs. So he didn't pan out. He wasn't a great player, but a bust. I don't think so. Carson Palmer, really good player. Eli Manning, great player. Alex Smith, terrific player. Who am I missing? Donovan McNabb, terrific. Marcus, good player. Jury out. Carson Wentz, Mitch Trubisky. Achilles Smith, a bust. Joey did not pan out for the Lions. Vince Young, correct me if I'm wrong, but he had a winning record, I think, his first year when he went third overall to Tennessee. Yeah, he went 8-5, then 9-6, and then now he was a guy who, the last 4 years of his career was in and out of the lineup, inconsistencies, just didn't really push the ball up the field, ended up with less than 9,000 yards, got a shot with Philly in 2011, 5 years with Tennessee, started a total of 47 games. So I know if it's your starter 5 years, is that a total bust out? Like I said, you'd really have to kind of delve a little bit deeper and, obviously, the goal is if you go first, it's to be Aikman or Peyton. Matt Ryan as a three was a terrific outstanding player. The late Steve McNair, who also went three, obviously got the team to a Super Bowl, was a fantastic player. So, yeah, delving into all of this, I was first of all, it was amazing exactly how many guys went one, two, or three over the last 30 years. And, you know, what do we make of Jameis Winston as well? All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break. And when we come back, yes, we are going to play an interview for you. It's going to be we're going to harken back to March Madness a year ago. And my conversation with one of the best guys around, their radio play-by-play man, Jimmy Miller, coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
He is the leader of this universe. He is the most important man in mixed martial arts. But this issue has now expanded beyond his control. You know, and you heard it from him. That ESPN, some of the government officials in California expressed a lot of concern about, hey, we're telling the state to shut down. I know this is on an Indian reservation, but we really, really strongly urge you to not go through with this. And again, if it were up to Dana, I still think he would. But the decision was taken out of his hands.
Thankfully. Anyway, that was Brett Okamoto of ESPN, who covers UFC, talking about the wise decision by Disney to shut it down. Shut it down. You can't be doing this stuff, dude. Everybody wants to make money. It's why we have jobs. But safety first. All right. Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, because, folks, it was March 27th of last year after beating Wisconsin, then UC Irvine. If you remember that one, the 13 versus the 12, that was Oregon and the Anteaters. They faced Virginia, who, again, was a number one seed after getting bumped as the only one seed ever to lose in the previous tournament. They had handled Gardner-Webb, then beat Oklahoma by 12, and we had a chance to talk with their radio analyst, Jimmy Miller, the day before the game. He was a Virginia forward who played with Ralph Sampson, was a key cog in the 1983 Sweet 16 team, and then the 1984 Final Four team, and we were fortunate to chat with him to get ready for Cavs Ducks, coming at you now, 95-3, The Score.
Wednesday edition of the big program, lock up the Sweet 16. Lock up the Sweet 16. Lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. That's already done. Huge matchup tomorrow, Oregon and Virginia. We are fortunate to have the radio analyst for the Virginia Sports Radio Network. And yes, I do remember his playing days alongside guys like Olden Polonese, Rick Carlisle. They had some big guy, Ralph Sampson, that's it. Pleasure to welcome in Jim Miller. Jim, thanks a lot for the time. How's life treating you these days?
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me. Life is great, having a good time watching all this great basketball.
You know, I got to start with a quick rewind, because I always felt it was kind of ironic. You know, Sampson took UVA to a Final Four. Then the season after he graduated, you guys kind of almost, I would say, snuck in the dance as a seven seed. Then your Final Four run, I mean, I went and reviewed it. I vaguely remembered. It seemed like every game, overtime, 1 point. Finally, you lost to Phi Slamma Jamma out here in the Northwest. What do you remember? What sticks in your mind about that incredible run?
Yeah, isn't that what this tournament is all about? I mean, you hit the nail on the head playing with Ralph Sampson and the National Player of the Year. We went to a Sweet 16, then we played in an Elite Eight game with him, and then he graduated. And here it's a group of guys all playing together, certainly not the most talented on paper, but playing together as a team, clicking at the right time. And you get into this tournament, and it's like that new season. It's the third season, if you will, and we just kind of put it all together, and I'll never forget the sitting. Our first games were in the Meadowlands, and I think we played Iona.
Yep.
And in jokingly in the lock or in the hotel room, we opened up the media guide, and I saw the brackets there, and I kind of went through the bracket jokingly to my roommate, and I said, you know, look, if we beat Iona in this game and then we play Arkansas and then we'll come down here to Atlanta and play Syracuse, and if we beat them, then we'll play, I'd pick North Carolina at the time, thinking North Carolina would beat Indiana, but Indiana ended up knocking off North Carolina, which probably helped us because we matched up better against Indiana than having to see North Carolina, Michael Jordan, and those guys again. And so, you know, and you get to that point. I mean, this you get to this point right now, the Sweet 16, all these teams feel like they can win. And we certainly were playing loose, free, and as a result, boom, you get into the Final Four.
Yeah, and that was, you know, the year before they expanded the field. It's just, I happen to have lived in North Jersey. That's where I'm from. So I remember that really, really, really well. continue with Jim Miller of Virginia. You know, one thought about last year, because I think sometimes people lose sight of the fact that college coaches are also teachers. And after that historic loss to Maryland, Baltimore County, I just remember Tony Bennett, his demeanor, what he said in the interview room, his praise for the Retrievers, how he talked up his guys. I thought he provided a real classy blueprint on how you guide young men at a time like that. What do you remember about that?
Well, that's Coach Bennett. He does such a great job of, I think, giving everybody perspective. And I'll never forget the week before that, Virginia just won the ACC tournament up in at the Barclays Center in New York, and everybody was down on the court jumping around, confetti was falling down, and people were cheering, and he kind of pulled his guys together, and there on the floor in the center of it all, and he kind of said, take this in, look at the moment, enjoy it, but don't dwell on it. You know, success is fleeting. Enjoy this moment, because they'll praise you today and they'll crucify you tomorrow. So in a period of a week, you know, bam, we Virginia played in that UMBC game, and he handled it with such grace and humility. It was impressive.
Yeah, I would say that almost came off as prophetic, you might say. Last week, that first game, the 1-16, I would imagine a little nervous Nelly time at halftime, but UVA had closed the gap. Then you guys scored the first two buckets of the half, and it seemed like you were off to the races. And then the victory against Oklahoma, where the defense in the first half was just suffocating. So safe to say, the last game and a half, this team has kind of found its footing and have displayed the performance that we'd expect from a team of this caliber?
Well, the last game and a half, you hit the nail on the head. We had to play that first half of that first game, and I don't want to dwell on it, but I think you have to acknowledge the proverbial, you know, monkey on your back. No other team in the history of the game really had to endure and play that game, that 1-16 seed, where you were the team that 364 days ago lost. So you knew everybody had that game circled. You were going to have to navigate and go through that game, and you know they did it. They played that first half. I think it showed the kind of the weight. And Kihei Clark hit a big basket there, a three with about 3 or 4 seconds left to go in the first half to cut it from a 9-point margin all the way down to a 6-point margin. And then Virginia was able to go into that locker room, and whatever Coach Bennett said in the locker room, you saw what how they came out the second half, and you just alluded to it. Played really well that second half of that game, and then played, I thought, much freer in that Oklahoma game, and has put themselves in a position now to play in a Sweet 16.
You know, I want to get to some of the specifics of the players, because one of the things I love about following the college game so close is the player development. A year ago, DeAndre Hunter was a nice freshman out of Philly, ACC Sixth Man of the Year, and this season he's given a more substantial role. Now he's the leading scorer. I mean, I don't think it's a secret. A 6'7 guard with his skill set has lottery potential. For those not familiar, what could you tell us about his game and how much he's improved as a sophomore?
Well, he has improved significantly. He had a wonderful redshirt freshman year, and I think you could start to see the potential there. And you break the season into kind of three mini seasons, and so that non-conference season at the beginning of the year, he was navigating that, and I'm talking about last year, and then boom, we had our first ACC conference game, and he just kind of took it to another level, and then we went and played on the road at Virginia Tech, and he had just a coming out party. And so you transition and look now at what he's done this year. He is a prolific player that can play inside and out. He can score at all three levels. He can stretch the defense with his ability to shoot from three-point range. He's shooting over 40% from the three-point line. He has the ability to put the ball on the floor and shoot that mid-range jumper. He makes great decisions. He's a great passer. He's just a very skilled, a big man that has great athleticism, and I think the upside for him is still large.
Another guy is Ty Jerome, who's also a big guard from Westchester County, north of Manhattan. Struggled a bit with a shot in the ACC tournament, but the first two games of this tournament, it seems he's found his stroke. What could you tell us about the kind of player he is and how his game has come along?
Well, first of all, he is a fierce competitor, and he hates to lose. And he's one of those guys that you want to have on your team because he just wants to try to will his way, if his shot's not going down, to try to find a way to get everybody else involved to play. He's to me, he's deceptively larger than so it gives him the ability to, you know, he can put the ball on the floor. He makes great decisions. He's got great vision. He's creative with his passing ability, and he can shoot over you, and he can get into the paint and touch the paint without turning the ball over, and shoot a little floater over larger help defenders coming, and is able to make those little pocket passes inside, and he has deep range, so he's not afraid to shoot it from way out. And we were playing at Syracuse not too long ago there at the end of the season, and he shot one to all of us. It looked like it was just over half court, and he pulled up and nailed it. So he's I can think back in his career and look at where he has stepped up and made really big plays at key points in different games. At Duke last year, his freshman year at Villanova, under a minute to go, making a big basket. Certainly at Louisville last year, when we were all but done, and somehow he did a step back three that nailed it, that put us into a position to even have a chance to win that game. And that's the kind of player he is. He is fierce and a great teammate.
A couple final thoughts for Cavs broadcaster Jim Miller. Of course, Kyle Guy from the Hoosier State, first team All-ACC. I mean, one of the greatest three-point shooters in the history of that legendary conference. Actually, didn't shoot really well in rounds one and two, but some of those road games you guys won at Syracuse, Vatek, Carolina, he was spectacular. Safe to say he's kind of one of those heart and soul players, the proverbial straw that stirs the drink.
Yeah, you know, he has a high basketball IQ. Obviously you could see that he's been around the game his whole life, and he understands the game, and he can do things that really it's hard for a coach to teach. Mike Krzyzewski referred to him as a very close J.J. Redick, in reference to his ability to shoot the basketball. J.J. Redick's probably a little bit bigger, but Kyle Guy does not need a lot of space. He's got a quick release. He's got great footwork and a great feel. He can catch the ball. A lot of times people think that a shooter has to kind of catch it right there in the on the numbers, and they actually practice a drill where they're catching the ball at different spots, below their knees, above their shoulders, and to the left, to the right. And he has the ability to catch it and quick release, and he has deep range. And when he's on, to your point, he has not shot the ball particularly well the last few games from behind the three-point line, but he plays a good game. He's had good games. He does all those other things that, as a coach, you want your guy to do. And he's a playmaker. He can get other people involved. And nobody's going to, you know, not guard him. So he's going to draw the defender, sometimes a double team coming off a screen. So that benefits the other players on this team. And I think if I had to think of a word to describe this Virginia team, say, to last year's team, is the versatility. I know you didn't ask this question specifically.
No, that's good.
But, the versatility, because when a guy, you know, we talked about the big three and DeAndre Hunter, Ty Jerome, and Kyle Guy. If one of those guys or two of those guys or players are not on, there are other players that have the ability to pick up the scoring. And maybe we didn't have that as much a year ago that we do this year. And I think that makes us an interesting matchup for any team that we're going to go against.
You know, and lastly, I always like to step outside our Oregon bubble, because this Duck team has gone through a remarkable transformation. This is the best defensive team I've seen. I follow this program for 29 years. But what are you hearing from the players, the coaches, your observations about the kind of Oregon team UVA will face tomorrow night?
Yeah, so I've not had a chance to see Oregon play a lot, just because being out there on the West Coast, and probably going to bed when they're on TV. So what I know is that they're big. You guys have won the last 10 in a row, I believe, and you turn your opponents over. You've got great rim protection, and obviously you're doing something right when you are able to turn it around in the middle of the season and finish strongly like you have. And to get to this point, again, in the NCAA tournament, being a Sweet 16 team, Dana Altman is a wonderful coach, and I know that Coach Bennett and his staff have a great deal of respect for him and the program that he's built out there, and certainly it's going to be a hard-fought match tomorrow night going up against those guys.
Well, folks, he's Jim Miller, a UVA Cav through and through. We greatly appreciate you spending some time with us talking Cavalier hoops. You travel safe, and if your next venture lands you in Minneapolis, well, best of luck. And, Jim, really appreciate you taking the time to join us on our show. Thanks a lot, and you be well.
Steve, thanks so much for the opportunity.
All right, have a good one. the day before last year's Sweet 16 game at the Yum Center against Virginia, which turned out to be a grinder, 53-49 UVA on their way to the title. We'll take a break, back with more sports talk, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guaranty RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guaranty.com.
I think, unfortunately, Wisconsin is not going to be the last, and maybe not, is not even the first, and we just haven't heard about it yet. But I think athletic departments around the country are looking for ways to cut back costs with so much uncertainty. And, you know, this was a decision the NCAA made and then left it up to the institutions to decide whether or not to give student athletes in spring sports, you know, seniors, the same amount of financial aid or less next year.
That's Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN on the decision by Wisconsin, according to their athletic director, Barry Alvarez, during this this time of unprecedented uncertainty. They will not be allowing seniors to pursue another year with their teams in 2021. We try to encourage our seniors to go ahead. If you're going to graduate, graduate, move on with your life. We appreciate what you've done. The future is in question, and they can't promise anything. And Wisconsin, Madison, has made the decision not to pursue waivers that would extend the eligibility of our senior student athletes. So what else? There is the NCAA is going to have a vote on May 20th, according to a report, discuss a one-time transfer waiver that could lead to a busy spring. And there's been no determination just yet. So right now, by the way, at D1, 746 men's basketball players. In the transfer portal, 181 of them classified as grad transfers. So 565 players have entered the portal with the expectation of sitting out 2021. Yeah, that stuff gets a little deep, but yeah, that conversation with Jimmy Miller, and then so I'm reading the recap from Oregon losing that nail biter to eventual national champion UVA last year, and it's amazing. The first quote came from Peyton Pritchard, you know, in the midst of that great team, and calling even though they lost, it was a positive for the way they turned around the season. And then I scroll down to the piece, and it's kind of interesting. After clocking all 40 minutes against Virginia, remember, this is as a junior, Peyton Pritchard has played more minutes than any other player in D1, more than Javon Best of St. Louis, and the four assists gave him 175 for the year, fourth all-time in Oregon history. And just going back at that game, well, you could see it coming all year, but, you know, Pritchard really was coming on the end of last year, and he had a really good all-around game against Ufa, Jerry, in such a low-scoring game. He ended up with 11 points, 7 rebounds, and a team-high 4 assists, and yeah, that you look at that game, and it's like, oh, man. Anyway, appreciated getting able to hear that again. What a terrific guy. All right, hang tight. 5 o'clock hour of Sports Talk on a Friday is next. 95.3 The Score.
I got a lot of problems with you people.